From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
The Dice Men Cometh! Oh, that's enough of that. Anyway, this is Leon here with Dice Wife. Say hello, Dice Wife.
Hello, Dice Wife.
Well, she sounds enthusiastic, but she's quite worse for wear. She's been coughing up a storm. Because we are still in New York City, and we're feeling a little bit under the weather with the old travel sickness, because we've been here eating all of the junk food, so much cheesecake. Anyway, so back to the boys in Tasmania. It is episode 257 on this Thursday, the 11th of the 4th, 2019, 3 days after the day of my birth. And we are going to talk about always all the card games, the board games, the role-playing games, any type of thing you can play on a table or around a table. And this week, the fellas are telling me that they are going to have an excerpt from their interview with Stephen Bonacore, which Mark said is an absolutely lovely geezer, and we are going to have a full-length episode of an interview with him coming up soon, I believe. We're also going to announce our BorderCon winner. And they can edit this out if they decide they don't have enough time or they can't make a decision in time. But hopefully they are. And the winner, congratulations, looking forward to seeing you. And the main thing they're going to talk about this week is the game Root, which, of course, I haven't played because I'm over the other side of the world. And just typical, I leave the boys alone for a week and they go rooting without me. So, that is it. Everybody, we're having a lovely time. I hope you are too. I hope to see everyone soon back in the motherland of Australia.
And there we go. Leon, live from New York City, is walking here.
Hey, that's right. Give me a cup of coffee.
You're with the Dice Men Cometh. It is, as Leon said, episode 257 of this particular radio show and Woo-hoo. Podcast. Number one in Australia, you'll have us know. Or we'll have you know.
Yes. I think we already know.
No, they'll tell us. So, look, Leon was pretty much spot on. We are going to kick this party off with your interview, or at least a little part of it anyway.
Yeah, just a teaser.
With Stephen Bonacore. And reasons for that teaser is that next week, for all our podcast listeners, you will get the joy of listening to the whole very expertly edited interview by Mark, because we will not be here because all three of us will be out of this particular state. Leon will still be in America. Mark will be in Hong Kong, but Garth trumps it all with being in New South Wales to visit his mum and dad. So that's how the show's going to start. You're going to have a little bit of a sneak peek at Stephen Bonacore interview. Then we are going to announce the winners for our BorderCon competition. And when I say winners, I mean winner, who will get the only two available tickets to the best 4 days of board gaming, this side and the other side of the Queen's Birthday long weekend that is in Albury. And they will get to play this particular game, whatever it may be, with the Dice Men. So that's exciting. And then we will talk about the Golden Geek Board Game of the Year for 2018. And that is a game that would never be named in Australia, because no Australian would name a game Root.
Leon already got the first Root pun in.
There'll be no doubt plenty more. So, look, we're not going to rattle on anymore because this show is packed full of jam. I'm Garth.
I'm Mark.
Leon is AWOL, which is always lovely. But we're going to throw to a song.
I was going to say, he's contributed more in the last 2 weeks probably than he has for years.
No, Leon is an integral part of this particular little triumvirate. And I look forward. I miss him. I miss the little guy. So, let's throw to a song. And then we're going to come back not with what we've been playing lately, but with Stephen Bonacore's interview. So you're with the Dice Men Cometh. It is Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and here is your song.
Hey, this is Dan May. I'm the creative director at Starling Games and the creator of Polyhero Dice, and you're listening to the Dice Men Cometh. I've listened to the guys' ideas about creating their own games. One, on a very long drive back from BorderCon, was a legacy game about wallpapering. It's not bad, actually.
Well, and there you go. That was Kiss Chasey with friends like you. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And we are not going to start at all this episode by telling you what we've been playing lately. You'll just have to sit on that and wait.
We're mixing it around.
Because Mark was very lucky to be up at 7 o'clock on a Saturday morning.
Yes.
Because of time difference. Interviewing one Stephen Bonacore, who, for anyone who knows anything about board games and jumps onto Board Game Geek, is the president of Stronghold Games. And according to his own biography, he will figure out what else to say later.
He even does his own little podcast, which I must admit I forgot about until he mentioned it, Board Game Insider. It's hosted by him and Ignace Trezacek.
Yeah, there you go.
Which would be fascinating. Anyway.
So look, just to give you a little bit of a heads up, mm-hmm. the full interview will be released as a podcast in lieu of next week's episode because we will not be here. We will be on all the corners of this particular globe.
It will come a little bit early, though, because...
Well, you're getting a bit older and...
No. As you'll find out in the excerpt...
There's a reason
There's
for
a
that.
Thing that's coming soon that he talks about in the interview.
All right. Well, Mark's going to push a button. And here is Mark's chat with one Stephen Bonacore.
Now, one of the games that we're most interested in, though, and we've talked a lot about this on our show recently, is Terraforming Mars. Now, obviously, Frick's Games has had a massive hit on their hands. What stage did Stronghold and Frick's get involved together?
That's a great question. So early on, when Frick's had this idea for this game, we were introduced to them by the printer, one of the largest printer of games in the world right now, I believe, Ludofact in Germany.
Oh, yes.
Ludofact was, looking to print the game with Frick's, and we were printing many of our games over at Ludofact, and the contacts there knew that I was very aggressive, looking for more games, looking for more partnerships, and they introduced the two companies, Frick's Games and Stronghold Games, and it's been history ever since. Now, we got involved at a point where they believed that the game was pretty much ready to go, and we played it, and we said, you got something great here, but this game really isn't quite ready yet.
Oh.
So we took a year with them. And this is not something that we'll normally do, meaning most times Frick's Games are great people. There are 16 siblings in the family,
wow.
10 boys and six girls, and a lot of them have input into the company and into various portions of it. So they had this game, but we said to them, listen, guys, we think we can do this, make this a little bit better. So I said, it's going to cost you time. But I think in the end, it's going to be a good idea for us to do this. So basically, we spent another year almost. They wanted to have the game out at Essen 2015. We spent almost another year. So the game actually released in the early fall of 2016, and we had it at Essen, of course, 2016. We did much development with them. I had a guy here, Jeff Gamble, who he's a very good friend of mine and a great game developer, and he spent countless hours back and forth tweaking things, making some changes. The whole concept of taking two actions per turn was something Jeff came up with because, just doing that one action, you can't get those great combos. So we came up with that for him. We came up with the fact that it would be great if we could do this as a sort of a beginner and an intermediate and an advanced game all in the same box. So all of that is reflected in there so that most gamers just jump in to the full thing. But we also wanted to make sure that we could have this game somewhat accessible to just a novice gaming crowd. Now, the big gamers, the alpha gamers, have already jumped on this and gone crazy. But we want to continue pushing this out to people who are not as fluent in all of the major, more complicated games one sees now.
Yes,
and certainly. Even though Terraforming Mars is only a middleweight game, still it is more complicated than a game that a new gamer might want to get into right from the bat. So we've come up with a lot of things. Jeff came up with a lot of things in working with them, and I think all for the better. And I think, obviously the sales and the acceptance by all gamers worldwide has really shown that, this is really a great game.
And you've obviously had a lot of success, not only with the base game, but also with the expansions. Mm-hmm. And now we'll chat, I think, in a little while about your new and upcoming expansion. But mm-hmm. the question that's on our lips, is there going to be Terraforming Mars Big Box Edition?
That may be the biggest question that I'm asked about Terraforming Mars. The short answer is no comment. The longer answer is, and I will be completely frank with you. It's not like we're actively working on it. The point where I won't comment anymore is probably the point where you can say, oh, they must be actively working on it. But it certainly is 100% in my head and in Frix's head and in the new Indie Game Studios, which is the merged company, of mm-hmm. course, as you know, with Indie Boards and Cards. It's in our heads to do that. And we're at this time just simply trying to figure out which the best way to handle it. I got to tell you that I think the best way to handle it is to go collector's edition route, not just like big box, but really collector's level edition, way blown out, painted tiles, and just really, really, really something that people would want to own and be really proud of, making it one of the centerpieces of their game collection. Because the game is certainly popular enough at being the number 4 ranked game of all time.
I mean, that's incredible, isn't it?
It's astonishing. It's truly transformational, you know, for a company such as ours. So we think that the game is certainly popular enough to have a very expensive version. This, you know, we're talking once you get to like something you're going to call collector's edition, you're probably at the $300 or more range, you know, of things.
Yes.
So nothing promised here in any way. And I guarantee we're not talking to the manufacturers right now to figure out how to do it, but it is on my roadmap mentally to have something such as that come out.
I'm sure you did see recently there was a Kickstarter for a custom tile set for Terraforming Mars. Did you see that?
We did.
I guess, you know, that was not a massive campaign, but the fact that they raised over 40,000 euros from less than 1,000 backers clearly shows that people are willing to spend big dollars to improve their Terraforming Mars experience. Did you have any involvement? Did they have your permission? Was there anything happening there?
Short answer is no. Okay, and no.
Yeah.
They didn't. But they're, you're allowed to do those kinds of things. They did not use the trademarks and things like that.
Yes.
So we're not going to try to stop people from doing that. It's kind of bad karma on some level. Neither do we, you know, actively promote, you know, other people's
yes.
you know, add-ons or anything like that. We don't endorse any. People have come to me and they said they want to license the Terraforming Mars brand and they'll pay us royalties, and we keep saying literally no, we're not going to, because we don't want to endorse any one product. In the end, we're going to do something that we're really going to be proud of, and I think gamers worldwide will really embrace when they see what we end up doing.
Okay, and no Terraforming Mars movie coming down the pipeline?
It's funny. Somebody mentioned, like what game would you like to see made into a movie or TV series? And Terraforming Mars came up, and I said, well, it sort of is already. If you've ever seen the Nat Geo Mars show, it's now
yes.
in its finished. They finished 2 full seasons of it, and really, that's what the show is about. It's about not only the first missions to Mars, but the starting of the terraforming process. I don't know how many seasons they're going to continue, and they're obviously not going to continue over generations, right? Which is, you know, the game of Terraforming Mars takes place essentially over the course of 400 plus years, like, you know, 14 generations, whatever your average game is. You know, I don't think you can have something quite that epic in a television series or a movie, but I'm enjoying watching that. I don't think anybody has come to us yet to try to get rights for a TV series or movie.
Yeah, it's an interesting blend of documentary and fiction, isn't it?
Yes, it's sort of a documentary, but it's a fictional. It's a very fictional version of that, because obviously we're not doing a documentary. I mean, it has to have happened already. But they're doing a nice job of of keeping most things real. It's a little too emotionally dramatic on some level, yes. You know, but I think that that's sort of TV. They've got to kind of keep the people very emotional about different things, and they've done that. But, you know what I've been reading just recently? I've started to read Red Mars, which is the book series by Kim Stanley Robinson, yes, yes. From the 80s. You know, and that series of books, and I'm gonna kind of pitch it right now to everybody out there. I'm most of the way through the first book, and that book is truly sort of Terraforming Mars, the book. Oh, that really is what that is, and you know that Jacob Frixelius, the designer of Terraforming Mars, one yes. of the Frix brothers, he drew direct inspiration from the book. He even credits it in various ways in the rules. The rules examples, the names of the players, and the rules examples are Kim, Stanley, and Robinson. So he's playing an homage to those books, and you know, they were kind of seminal works at the time, and a pretty interesting read for those who want to see how, you know, also an author might write about them in a fictitious manner.
You mentioned, and we're well aware of it, we've actually mentioned it on our show before, that you've got the upcoming expansion Turmoil coming to Kickstarter soon. How far away is that one? And you want to give us some details about it?
Absolutely, I will. It's going to be very soon. I'm not sure when this podcast is going to drop, but it might be dropping right around April 16th, which is a week from... Ooh. We're recording this, if it's okay for me to say, on
of
April
course,
5th.
Yeah.
And so it's a week from Tuesday, so it's only in about whatever that is, like 12 days from now or something like that. And Terraforming Mars Turmoil, the fifth expansion, and we are calling it the final expansion, though I can see other things coming out. It's certainly going to be the final major expansion to the game. And what happens in Turmoil? Well, what happens when any large group of people end up getting together and they have differing ideas on how something should happen? That's called politics, right?
Yes.
That's called factions develop. And now these factions are going to develop on the planet Mars, and there's going to be turmoil. There's going to be different views on how we should be terraforming, or maybe we should slow down and not do so much terraforming. So we'll have like the red party, the reds will be like, no, like let's leave Mars the way it is. This is like a great place to you know, keep as a pristine environment and not do too much of this terraforming. And then you'll have the greens who say, no, we have to green everything up, make this as Earth-like as possible. The Kelvinists want to continue pushing up temperatures on Mars because that's going to be the key to getting it more and more habitable. There's a science party. There's going to be six major factions on Mars, and you'll be sending delegates to the Terraforming Council, which is kind of like a Senate. You can think of it like that, a parliament for Mars. And you'll be influencing the different factions, the parties on Mars. And why would one want to do that? Because there'll be these global event cards that come out. There'll be the current global event, the next generation global event, and then three generations from now. A third turn from now, you'll be seeing another event. So you'll be able to plan for these events, and depending on who's in power, you're either going to get bigger benefits from the global event going off, or maybe a lesser detriment, because some of the global events are not going to be so good. So you're going to want to influence the parties strategically at the right times to get extra benefits or less detriments when these global events trigger. And they, of course, they're not random. I mean, they'll be random, but you'll be able to plan for them as you move ahead. You might say, wow, in two generations from now, if I don't have at least some people in the scientists' party, then I'm going to get hit with some really bad stuff. So yes. I'm going to make sure I get some things going on there. And that's going to be the flow. We're deeming this an expert expansion because it's going to add like a completely much bigger mechanic off to the side. It's like an area control of the various factions on Mars. It'll probably add a little bit of time to the game, but for people who want more and more meat on the bone of terraforming Mars, this is going to really, really, really be a big thing for them. So we're really excited about this. Coming to Kickstarter, starting on April 16th, and it's already been leaked out that there will be, as part of the Kickstarter, some new player boards.
Ooh.
That we'll be putting out, some new double-layer cardboard player boards. That's the single thing that people like, you know, want the most is to have new player boards. We're going to do that. Anybody who backs the Kickstarter, you're going to be able to get those double layer player boards that people have really wanted.
That's fantastic news, because obviously you have almost single-handedly created an industry where people are making these add-ons for games. And, you know, if it's not foam core type things to help you organize your box, the other piece that you absolutely need in your game is your player board for Terraforming Mars. Because anyone who's ever bumped their table and made those little cubes go flying knows how frustrating it is, that's for sure. So that's fantastic news.
It's going to be great. I think people are going to really like what we've come up with. We're actually still literally tweaking the design of it.
Yep.
But we know what people want. We're responding to it. And I think that in the end, they're going to enjoy that. And of course, I'd like to say, just in case, because the question will come up with your fans, no, they won't be exclusive to Kickstarter. I don't believe in exclusives. I just, you know, I think that's a bad thing to do.
Yes.
In Kickstarters or anything. It makes people feel like they weren't special. So yes, if you don't, for whatever reason, and that's fine, don't want to back the Kickstarter, they will be available in some format later. You're going to have to obviously pay for them and pay more than you would if it was on the Kickstarter, but they will be available.
Well, there you go. That was Mark talking with Stephen Bonacore of Stronghold Games with a delicious little insight into what we can all expect.
Mm.
16 April, Mark?
Yes, that's right. Kickstarter up for Turmoil launching on 16 April, which will include, and I don't know whether you'll have to back the expansion to be able to add on the player boards or how it's exactly going to work, but hey, you've only got five, by the time this podcast comes out, probably 2 or 3 days to go to wait to find out. I just recently picked myself up a copy of Terraforming Mars. Finally, Leon obviously still has his copy. So I think I'm going to be jumping on board this expansion, if only for the player boards.
Well, look, Terraforming Mars was the game that immediately went gangbusters and immediately went, the component quality is really not gangbusters. It's sort of average and bendy and single ply and what have you.
Well, the player boards just jump out you the first time you play, as in,
They're really bad.
This is not really great, and it just one small table bump can cause absolute chaos.
Correct. So, Stronghold Games and Firaxis going, or Fraxilius are going, hey, getting our game out there to more people with double-sided board technology and double-sided player mat technology. Third-party distributors going, oh, what about all the stuff we made? But anyway, that's okay.
Well, there'll still be the people who want to get the
pimped out,
the broken tokens where they include not only the player boards but also all the box lining and everything like that. I think there'll still be a place for those. And actually, Garth, you might be surprised to know, I asked Jamie Stegmeyer a question very early this morning in his video questions.
Mm-hmm.
I just happened to be about to go to bed, and he was just starting his video Facebook Live thingy about third-party manufacturers of aftermarket accessories. He thinks they're a great idea. He's happy to support them as long as they don't, you know, claim that they have exclusive rights to a particular game when they don't.
Well, Stegmeyer and MeepleSource have a great working relationship.
Yeah.
You can buy so many after-retail release bits and pieces through MeepleSource.
Mm.
So, yeah, I'm not surprised. Anyway, we better throw to a song before the real show kickstarts, which is what we've been playing lately, which is Root. So you're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Come back and listen to us talk about those fearsome forest creatures.
Hey, Garth.
Yes.
Here we are driving along to our latest game night. And you know what I love to do when I drive around?
Well, I do remember the last time you drove and almost...
Get out of the way!
That sounds right. You almost killed us, remember?
That's right. Well, it's probably because I was slightly distracted. Because I was listening to a podcast. I like to listen to podcasts when I'm driving.
Yep.
It takes my mind off my day at work. It lets me catch up with politics or board games or all sorts of things.
Well, the funny thing is I was actually listening to a podcast on my walk into work, which I was doing earlier.
Yeah.
And I found out
that there are TV actors who get paid in excess of $20 million a year.
What?
And look, all they're doing is creating little half-hour episodes once a week. Now, I happen to know that as Australia's leading podcast on board gaming, we do a lot more work than half an hour a week, and all we're asking is if anyone's got a spare dollar kicking around, just jump on a Patreon and throw it our way.
Yeah, and look, I know myself. I support a couple of podcasts because I really believe in what they're doing. And as you said, a dollar or $2 or $5 or $10 or hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, you know, it's greatly appreciated by the creators of those podcasts, look, that's for sure.
We'll even take Monopoly money. Just don't tell Leon that.
So jump onto Patreon. Check out The Dice Men Cometh. We'd love your support. Any amount you can afford, it's all greatly appreciated. We put the resources back into the show, helping us to travel to game conventions so we can interview people and you can hear all the cons that you're missing out on. And maybe you'll get to go there later.
I know. Doesn't that sound amazing?
It sounds worthwhile. Get out of the way, you idiot, young person!
Well, there you go. That was current top 10 hit chart. Fleetwood Mac from about 16 diggity 4 with Black Magic Woman. Now, you are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We have a couple of shout-outs to give before we announce the winner of our BorderCon competition.
That's right, because it'll probably be a good few weeks, particularly until I come back, because I'm away for 3.5 weeks. Woo!
Yeah, shut up. So, look, what we've got is 3 Kickstarters that are all Australian,
yep,
that are all good, and that all could always do with a bit of extra support,
yeah,
because we're Australian, they're Australian, we play games, you play games, everyone plays games, so why not back and play Australian games?
And the first one, and look, if you are a board game geek regular user, you may have seen this one skyrocketing up the hotness track. It's going absolutely gangbusters.
Is it the mostest funded Australian board game ever?
Well, is it a board game, Garth?
Yes.
If it is, if it's a board game, then I'd say I think yes, because this is Blood on the Clock Tower, a captivating social deduction game of murder, mystery and demons. In a nutshell, it's, I guess you could say it's like Werewolf on steroids and ice and smack and every other drug you might like to try recreationally.
More about that than I would.
Because as far as I understand, you don't really have your vanillages, your villagers. You, everyone has a separate role, and you can
everyone
have
is special, Mark, just like in real life.
Yeah. Now we've seen this. We've seen it at PAX. We've seen it at LFG. You may have seen it featured on Shut Up and Sit Down.
Leon played it at PAX a couple of years ago.
He did. Shut Up and Sit Down, I think, in quite a large part, are responsible for some of the success of this campaign.
If they aren't getting a percentage, then they're obviously just doing it for a lot of love.
Well,
but they
normally don't talk about
this. This is the very first Kickstarter video review that Shut Up and Sit Down have ever done. And Quinns is calling it his favourite game ever, ..
Yeah.
..
It's amazing.
.. Like, lots of dots.
Yes.
That was my worst Stephen Colbert. I can't do Stephen Colbert doing Donald Trump. But look, Blood on the Clock Tower by the Pandemonium Institute is now at a virtually $570,000 when they wanted $90,000. So immediately their target was high.
Yeah.
And they have decimated it.
4,500 backers.
For a game that is at least $90 and you don't get a huge amount of content in terms of physical stuff, but you get a huge amount of experience in that game. And that's why Leon has backed it in the last couple of days.
Yeah.
So we will be able to play this at some point in the not too distant future. We'll probably play it at PAX again or who knows when and where. But Blood on the Clock Tower is killing it. I'm pretty confident we can tick this down as the most successful Australian Kickstarter, full stop.
Yeah, now the second one that you want to cast your eye over, we teased this, 2.5 years ago, I think.
Mm.
Good friend of the show, Alex Winter from Red Genie Games, maker of The Brigade, another successful Kickstarter. He is the designer, and then there's a whole bunch of artists and writers from Fru Games, who you may have heard of, who have Fru Comics, because they produce, they're the Australian producers of the Phantom comic, that guy in the purple tights, the Billy Zane movie, and there is a Phantom Treasures of Dracon board game with minis and a board and adventures and stuff. And I think they need a bit of help.
They do need a bit of love. Like they've passed 50%. They're at about 60-odd percent. But they're also in that middle area of a Kickstarter campaign where it's not the start and it's not the end and it's just sort of dribbling along. So, look, we don't know this game. We've not played this game, but we want to support Australian games. And they've worked on it for so, so, so long. There was PAX 2017, I reckon, when we talked about this. And, look, the Phantom is a remarkably well-loved bit of IP.
Oh, it's absolutely beloved by, I mean, not just Australians, but around the world. It's been going for such a long time. I would love to see this be successful, even just for that fact, because I am a huge PH fan of the PH Phantom.
Well, I would like this to smash its target and not just creep over the edge.
Yeah.
But we will see. And finally, Mark, what is the final Kickstarter shout-out that you would like to give?
Well, it's a little role-playing game by Tin Star Games and designer Steve D, who sort of hangs out with us sometimes on the Tabletop Board Game Designers of Australia sort of forum. I was lucky enough to meet Steve up at LFG last year, and he ran some board game design studios, I was going to say, some board game design programs there. Award-winning designer, apparently. But this is quite an interesting little role-playing game, and where you are angels that have fallen to Earth, and then there's some stuff.
Wow.
And look, I don't want to tease it because it's quite an intriguing story, and I think you might want to dive in and check it out for yourself. That's only just launched.
Oh, it's only a couple of days old. The thing is about role-play games is that they have a tendency to be remarkably successful. And look, this one is already at virtually 50%.
Yeah, it's taken
and it's only been going for a day or two. So, look, Relics by Steve D is, look, he's put so much effort into this, blood, sweat and tears, and it's been going on. We've had a chance to read a bit of it.
It's been a labour of love, that's for sure.
So I really am curious to see how this goes. It certainly looks like all indications it's going to fund and fund really, really well. It's already got 165 backers. As I say, it's 50% funded virtually. So I'm curious to see how this plays out. Congratulations, Steve D, for getting it out there. There is a lot of talk on the Australian tabletop industry about this game. There's a whole bunch of chit-chat and people passing on the links and what have you, which is great. So best of luck. I hope it smashes its target again.
There you go. So there's three Kickstarters to check out. Now, talk about absolute hotness. We have got hotness to give away right now. It's not our own personal hotness.
Well, you never know.
We could give some of that away. But no, we are talking about our BorderCon competition.
Correct.
And firstly, let me say thank you to everyone who entered. We had a huge number of entries. Now, on one hand, that's really great because it's great to see people keen to get to BorderCon, keen to play a game with us. On the other hand, it makes it really difficult.
It does.
To decide a winner.
And the thing is, even for you being a natural Tasmanian, even you eventually run out of fingers. Like, I'm from Sydney, so you know, I've got 10. But anyway, there can only ever be one winner. And that's who we're going to mention tonight, because otherwise we would spend this show and next show talking about all the wonderful entries that we got. So, look, without any further ado, are we going to play the sting and then we'll announce?
Yeah, let's hear it first, because when you hear this, I think a lot of people, maybe not everyone, but a lot of people would certainly go, oh, I can see why that was the winner.
So, Mark, without any further ado, press the button, and here is our winner.
Hello, gentlemen. It was so sad to hear about your BorderCon 2019 winner. It's strange that he received a mysterious letter asking to meet him in that specific location, but the fact that lightning hit the tree he was standing under is obviously just a crazy coincidence. It's good to hear he was discharged with only minor injuries, but unfortunately had to miss the event, and, wrong timeline. I mean, my condolences to your BorderCon winner. I'm glad the charges were dropped, but to spend the entire long weekend in custody rather than at the convention, married royalty. GPS malfunctioned. Received $1 million from Nigerian third cousin. Huh. Oh, that one. Gentlemen, please ignore the previous audio malfunction. I would be so glad to join you at BorderCon over a few rounds of Tragedy Looper, an intriguing game by Japanese designer Barkafire, where a sinister mastermind tries to bring his secret plans to fruition while 1 to 3 protagonists work together to foil the plot. And if they fail, and they will, they get to go back in time and try again. It is, as Mark would say, very interesting and very different from any other game I've played. To miss out on this opportunity would be the greatest tragedy of all.
Well, there you go.
Indeed. So, look, a big congratulations out of all of the entries to one Chris Mann.
Woohoo!
Who is lucky enough to be the recipient of the only 2 BorderCon tickets in the Cosmos universe. And now, on this very day when the first ever black hole image is released, he gets to be as unique as that particular black hole.
Wow.
It's amazing. So we will be in touch shortly to let you know tonight that you are the winner, because otherwise you may not listen and hear the episode until a few days from now. So that is amazing. And we get to play Tragedy Looper with him.
Yeah, it's one I have been interested in playing. I mentioned to you earlier, I actually mulled the copy of this for a friend of the show, Rachel, 3 or 4 years ago, and I looked inside the box and was quite fascinated. Never have had an opportunity to play it. So, I mean, that's just a great coincidence that he happened to pick a game we actually want to play. But I think, you know, the fact that he cleverly tied the game into his little story that he told about why what happened to BorderCon and different timelines and things just sort of pushed us over the edge.
Correct. So congratulations to Chris. But anyway, we need to draw a break in this particular conversation because we need to come back and talk about Root, the Golden Geek Game of the Year. So you're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We'll be back in a minute to talk about all things rooting. In this house, the decor's the
obvious upstairs. Hi, this is Ella from Ella Loves Board Games, and my favorite podcast is The Dice Men Cometh.
Well, there we have. That was Gnarls Barkley with Feng Shui or Feng Shui or Feng Shui. I'm going to find out all about that when I'm in Hong Kong. I won't be here at Edge Radio 99.3 FM for the next few weeks.
Can't wait. So you think we pay out Leon when he's not here, Mark?
Oh, yes.
You ain't seen nothing.
Why, you wait till you see the intros that I phone in from Hong Kong and from my cruise and from Vietnam and all the other places I'm going. Anyway, enough of that, because we are now down to the pointy end of the show where we talk about the game that won the Golden Geek Award. We mentioned it last week, and it was nominated in many, many categories.
Correct.
Of the Golden Geek Awards. It won the Game of the Year. At the time, we were like, well, we can't say too much about it because we haven't played it. So, of course, what do? We rushed out, hassled Trent to go and learn it because he had picked it up recently.
Correct.
And we got it to the table.
Well, Mark, I've got one question for you.
Yes.
Have you ever tripped over a branch?
Yes.
Have you ever tripped over a log?
Yes.
How about a root? And that is the game that we are talking about tonight, which is the game that no Australian designer would ever have the guts to name, because I believe in North America, root means a whole bunch of different stuff than it does to Australia. So designer Cole Whirl and artist Kyle Ferrin of Letter Games have designed a game that, look, has rocketed up the BGG ranks. It now sits quite comfortably at position number 60 and will arguably go higher than that.
Yeah, for sure.
But what is this particular riddled game? Well, this is a game where at least one and a maximum of 4, but with an expansion up to 6 players, will be fighting and vying for control over the wilderness. And it sounds lovey-dovey.
Have you ever seen a cuter game?
Yeah, maybe. but not a game that is as contradictory as this particular game.
Mm-hmm.
You place it out there, you put the meeples down, you put the board down, and you go, this is going to be fun. I might get my kids involved. And then you play it, and you go, no, no, I'm not going to get my kids involved, but oh, it looks so pretty. So Root is a game of adventure and war in which at least one and a maximum of six players are going to be trying to control this vast wilderness. Now, we are only going to talk about the base game. The reason we're only going to talk about the base game is that's the only one we've played. And we're really not going to talk about the Vagabond, who is the fourth player. And this is where it's important to note that this game is quite structured when it comes to the setup, because there are, in the base, four different factions.
Mm.
You've got the Marquis de Cat, you've got the Eerie, you've got the Woodland Alliance, and you've got the Vagabond. And they are the four base characters.
Yep.
Now, if you're playing with three players, the Vagabond just gets kicked to the corner. If you're playing with two, then the Woodland Alliance doesn't exist anymore. So it's quite specific, because this game is heavily modified depending on how many players are sitting around the table. And it's very much akin to Vast.
I was going to say,
which is not surprising, because that's also something that Letter Games was quite heavily involved in, including Kyle, the artist, doing the art for Vast.
Yes, and I was going to say, if you've been living under a rock in the Vast Woodland area and hadn't heard about Root, well, firstly, wake up! But secondly, yeah, Vast, I think, was... I don't know if it's Leader or something like that. That was their first game, and quite a hit, but a very different game, because in that game you had, I think, again, one to four or five, and then extra rolls came after, basically playing one to four or five different games where the things you do on a turn were different, your victory conditions were different, the types of pieces and the number of pieces and the things you were able to do in your turn were so super different from each other. And we did play that one, and I remember we didn't love it. We were sort of scratching our heads a bit.
It's one of those games where you are all sitting down and playing four or five different games at the same table, and that's really interesting, and it's really fun to work out the puzzle, but geez, it's really tough to teach.
Yes.
And it's really tough to get a realistic view on what the game actually is, because you're focused solely on your one particular faction. And Root, to some extent, is the very same thing. Now, in the game that we played, and we've only played it once, so this is not a review, this is initial thoughts after one play, after it got the BGG Geek Game of the Year. Mark, you are the Marquis.
We.
De Cat.
We.
Trent was the Eerie. And I was the Woodland Alliance.
Yeah, cursed.
Completely inoffensive, just sitting back, chilling out. So, look, the thing is, there's two ways to win this game. One is to be the first player who gets 30 victory points.
Yes.
Or you can throw your 30 victory points down the toilet and go for a completely different style of victory, which we'll get to in a moment. However, each of the factions have completely different ways that they are going to win. The Marquis, De Cat, just wants to exploit the resources of the forest. All they want to do is chop down trees, get more people out, build more sawmills, be everywhere on the board.
We are everywhere.
And there are more cat meeples than any other species you will find on this particular board. So they are insidious.
And they're so cute. They're so cute.
Yeah. Then you got the Eerie. Now, the Eerie used to be in charge of all of this particular region, so there's a bit of them, but they're birds. They can fly everywhere, but all they're trying to do is spread their influence and regain what they once had. And that was Trent. Now, we'll talk about them a little bit more, but they are also quite specific in the way that they can do things in their leader hierarchy, and that's really quite interesting. And then you've got me. It's the little seemingly innocuous Woodland Alliance with fluffy bunnies and nothing going on here. We deal in sympathy. We just want to get things back the way they were, and everyone feels sorry for us if we play our cards right. And then you got the Vagabond, which we didn't play and we cannot talk about, but needless to say, the Vagabond is very unique, because there is only one Vagabond pawn in this whole game, whereas all of the other alliances have anywhere from a bajillion zillion cats
yes.
to a couple of Woodland Alliance characters, the Vagabond strolls around the forest and he makes and breaks alliances with various factions, and he might form a something or other with another faction to try and piggyback off of Victory, but he does their own particular thing. So, look, we're not going to talk about this specifically. What we want to say is this game isn't as complicated as a lot of reviewers have made it out to be.
Yeah, I was quite surprised.
This game has not a tutorial, but it has a walkthrough where after you've started initial setup, you then go through a little, maybe four-page walkthrough rulebook.
Yeah, it's basically two full turns.
And it starts with, in this case, Mark as the cats, and it says, okay, the cats start their turn by going blah, 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 blah. It passes on to Trent as the Eerie, and the Eerie does blah, 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 and then the Woodland Alliance does blah, blah, blah. And the way that works is it shows you what you can do in your turn and how you can do it, and that's important.
Demonstrates all the different actions, how cards work, a little bit of player interaction. Correct. It's very clever, actually.
And look, the way this game works is over three phases, roughly. So there are three phases in this game that you'll go through, and I'm just going to bring them up now because those three phases are...
very thematically named.
Let me get to it again because I missed the page that I was going through. Cue some music, Mark.
So you've got...
first of all...
the first phase...
which is Daylight.
Yeah.
Sorry, Birdsong.
Birdsong.
So Birdsong is where you essentially get to do a little thing that's associated with your faction. Thank you, Mark. So, for example, the cats, they get to place some wood at each of the sawmills that they've got.
Yeah, we're chopping it up.
Whereas for the Eerie, they will get to add some bird cards to their hierarchy, which is quite important. And for me as the Woodland Alliance, I will get to potentially spread some revolt, and that's really nice. But then you go into the main thrust of this game, which is the daylight and the evening phases.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the way it's going to work is that you'll each have the opportunity to do almost as many things as you want to, but only if you can afford them to. Like, you've got to be able to have the resources to do things, or you've got to be able to have the cards in your hand to do the things. And we'll just use your faction again, Mark, as a little bit of a head start. So in your daylight, you can start a fight. Now, the way you go and have a fight is you say, hey, mate, I'm going to fight you.
Yeah, want to fight me?
The various factions can coexist quite peacefully in each of the particular clearings, but you can also be mean and go, oh, I'm a cat, you're a bird, I don't like you, so let's fight. So there's one of your things.
Eat you, Monsieur Bird.
Or you can march or on your faction. You can move, and marching in your case, Mark, was you could move one or two regions, whereas for most of us we could move and move one. But there's a specific rule in that you can only move if you either have dominance in the clearing that you're leaving from or the clearing you're going to, and dominance is quite simply, do you have more meeples than someone else?
Yeah.
Very straightforward. Or you can recruit, which is get more of your bad guys or good guys, depending on your alliance, into the board and into that battle. Mm. You can build stuff. So in Mark, in your case, you could build a whole bunch of different buildings. I think you could build sawmills. You could build recruiting stations. You can build some other bits and pieces that are summarily tore down. Or you can do some other bits and pieces too. But basically your actions were move, fight, build some stuff. Now with Trent's Eerie, he kind of could do that, but he was structured a different way because his was virtually programmed movement.
Mm.
In that he was only able to do four things. He was able to move, he was able to recruit, he was able to build, and he was able to battle. But he had to assign cards to those various actions, and if he couldn't do all those actions, then his turn was completely poop, and it would cause revolt within his faction, and his leader would sod off, and all the cards that he'd built up would disappear, and he'd start from scratch again. He'd lose some victory points, which was great.
And because he had I think four different leaders, which all have a different bias, and you start with each leader having two followers that they allocate into two of the four slots, but they're all different.
That's right.
But then each turn he's got to add a new card. Now the thing about the cards that I'm sure you're going to mention later, Garth, is that the cards have four suits which relate to the three different areas. Each of the clearings has a suit. You've got foxes.
Yeah, you've got foxes. You've got
mice.
Mice.
And bunnies.
And then you've got birds. Birds are wild because birds can fly everywhere. So, the Eyrie is a little bit different with this program movement side of things, and it's quite a tricky role to get right. But when our benchmark is Trent, then maybe it's really easy. Who knows? And then the Woodland Alliance. The Woodland Alliance is quite simple because they start off with nothing. Like, they virtually start off, you wouldn't even know they existed.
And that's what they deserve.
Because they don't start on the board at all. But you're dealing, as I said before, in sympathy. You really want to get the forest creatures on your side. So you want to spread some sympathy, or you want to incite revolt, which is basically taking over control over a clearing and get rid of all the everyone else. And you slowly chip away and make sure that ultimately you're the one who's defensible and that you're the one who can survive against the onslaught of the evil cats and the evil birds and the vagabond who we haven't seen. So look, in this game, and I know we've only got a little bit of time, we were really impressed that a game that we had been assured was complicated and assured would take quite a long time didn't. Now, we are notoriously bad at keeping games to anywhere approaching the number of minutes they say on the box. In fact, we're normally double that. We were able to play a three-player game of this, including teaching, in less than 3 hours, which I think is a pretty good achievement because we pay the mark tax every time we play.
Oh, yes.
But what I was really impressed with is this game is completely asynchronous. Everyone is doing their own thing, but they're also doing completely different things and keeping their eyes on different benchmarks and different milestones and different numbers of victory points. However, you're always keeping an eye on every other player. You're keeping an eye on the cards they've got. You're keeping an eye on the actions that they're doing because they are all interlinked, and what you do as a cat is going to affect the Eyrie as the birds and me as the Woodland Alliance. But you're also really trying to maximise every single turn you have to do a couple of things. Assert some dominance in some way, shape or form and get some damn victory points. Because that 30 victory points seems like a long way away, but geez, it disappears quickly.
Just wanted to flag two things. So one is the dual nature of the cards. So Absolutely. Obviously the cards have all the suits on them that we mentioned.
Yep.
And so with some of the actions, if you want to do an action in a particular area, you have to play a card of that suit.
Yeah, if it's a bunny zone you want to affect, you play a bunny card. Yeah,
but then the cards also have a crafting ability where the three different factions sort of had different ways they did crafting. As an example, the Makita cat, he used wood to craft things and make more buildings, which he then used to further assert his dominance.
Yes, I used sympathy to build.
Yes.
And that was nice because my sympathy spread all through the forest eventually.
And birds used sticks in their nests. And
their roosts.
Yeah, that's right. But, there's lots of different things you can make with the crafting. Some of these things didn't do anything except give victory points, although they do interact with the vagabond in the larger game. Some other things were one-off abilities or abilities that last for the whole game and change it up, which I thought was quite fascinating. We didn't mention battle, where you roll, I think they're 12-sided dice, but they basically have a 0, 1, 2, or 3 on all the faces. Normally, in a battle, the attacker will get that you roll the two dice. The attacker will get the higher dice. The defender will get the lower dice. However, the Woodland Alliance was so sneaky.
It was reversed.
So typical of you, Garth, is that they get to do it the other way around.
And
that was quite a clever battle system. The other thing I just want to flag with listeners is, so we have played quite a number and are big fans of the coin system, the counterinsurgency system from GMT. And the thing about those games and other GMT games like Here I Stand, Virgin Queen, some of those big behemoths is, and why I mention it is because they are asynchronous.
Yes.
And so we have played games where you are playing a very different game to each other and sort of managing your own thing. I just wanted to sort of throw that out there because there might be a level of difficulty for people that haven't played anything like that.
Look, we've got almost no time.
Yeah.
This is, without doubt for me, the easiest asynchronous game
to
play. GMT and coin games, tough.
Oh, yeah.
Vast, much tougher than this. This is simple in comparison, and it's aided beautifully by the player aids, the player boards that are very straightforward, and the walkthrough is simple. I love the fact also that there is the dominance victory, which there are four cards in a collective deck where they just mix it up, and instead of going for 30 victory points, you are trying to get dominance over something or other on the board. That just throws your strategy completely out and changes it, and that can be good or bad. But look, we are out of time here. So, look, thank you so much to everyone for listening to episode 257 of The Dice Men Cometh. We've had the interview that's teased Terraforming Mars. We've announced the winner of BorderCon.
Yes, congratulations, Chris.
And like all good nights, we've ended with a root.
Okay. Well, we won't see you next week, but we'll see you sometime in the future. Or for me, quite a little time. But have a great week. Play lots of games. Bye.
Booyah.
You've been listening to another episode of The Dice Men Cometh. Find us on dicemencometh.com, Facebook, Instagram, and if you like what you hear, please support us on Patreon.